Thank you, Mr. Kinsella. Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Sabbath to you all. Before we begin, just want to give a real quick shameless plug out to my wife. She graduated yesterday from the Oregon School of Massage. Very proud of her. All she has to do now is get her license. Yes, thank you. Thank you. All she has to do now is get her license, and she will begin to put those hands to work in service to people who are in pain and suffering and help them have a better life. Just very, very, very proud of her. I'd like to speak on a subject. I've talked about this before, but I'd like to revisit it by way of review. Sometime back, my wife and I were having a movie night, and we were sharing a dinner and a movie, and we were watching the movie Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and I recall a scene where an alien probe had come to Earth. It was investigating why it had lost communication with the Earth's humpback whale population. And in the process of doing that, this probe was putting out a really strong signal that was vaporizing the Earth's oceans. Well, in the midst of all this destruction that was going on, Vulcan Ambassador Sarek tells the Federation President, perhaps we should send out a distress signal while we still have time. And in the movie, of course, that distress signal ultimately saved the planet from destruction. You know, we can thank Captain Kirk for that, as he so succinctly put it. Once again, we've saved civilization as we know it. But in all of that, there was a phrase that caught my attention. While we still have time. And that's the title of the message today. While we still have time. In the movie, sending that distress signal gave the Earth time. Brethren, how much time do we have left? How much time before the return of Jesus Christ? How much time do we have left to get our act together, as it were? And what are we doing with that time? How are we using it? Are we using it to prepare for what may and what will come down the road, both physically and spiritually? Now, we hear this talked about at times, like before the Feast of Trumpets, during the Feast of Trumpets, and which, of course, is coming upon us very quickly. It's less than a month away, as we've heard. And in these talks, we're discussing the urgency of preparing to return for the return, of Jesus Christ to this earth in power, in glory, and in might. But are we urgent only during trumpets, or only urgent during the fall holy days? We must be ready, brethren, in season and out of season, as Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2, as he was encouraging Timothy to preach the word in season and out of season, to be ready, always ready to preach the word. Because again, realistically, how much time do we have left? I ask again. Does anyone know? No, of course not, because God said so. Not even Jesus Christ knows. We know that only God knows the day or the season when Christ will be sent back to this earth. So if we take a good look at what's going on around us, doesn't it seem like end time events are accelerating, that time is going faster? Things seem to be happening at an accelerated pace in this world as we watch current events unfold. So let me put it another way. Is overcoming, overcoming our human nature, the temptations we face, Satan the devil and his desires, the nature of society, is overcoming these things a priority for us? Are we taking the time to build and acquire and learn to use and ultimately use the spiritual tools necessary to do this? Are we taking the time to learn to use those tools effectively so that we will succeed in overcoming. So, as you've surmised, I want to discuss this subject today about how we use our time with some emphasis on spiritual growth, preparation, and readiness. I want to talk about how we use our time. So the Apostle Paul in the New Testament had something to say about how we use the time we're given. Let's turn to the book of Ephesians to begin. Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verses 15 and 16. Ephesians 5, verses 15 and 16. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. I want to note those two words here, circumspectly and redeem. And circumspectly is the word akribos in the Greek, G199 in Strong's. And according to Vine's expository dictionary, means diligently, accurately, carefully. Okay? And again, according to Vine's, the word redeem, as used in Ephesians 5 and verse 16, is the Greek word exagorazo, or pronunciation to that effect, G1805 in Strong's. And it means literally to buy up for oneself, or to rescue from loss. So according to Vines, to redeem time, then, is to make the what they say, quote, the best of every opportunity, turning each to the best advantage since none can be recalled if missed, end quote. Now, isn't that true of time? Isn't that true of opportunities that we come upon? Once it's gone, it's gone. If we miss it, if we waste it, we can't get it back. What did we do with it? You know, what kind of an accounting can we give for that time? Benjamin Franklin once said, "Do you love life? Then do not squander time, for time is the stuff that life is made of." And another saying that I saw on somebody's computer screen, I've said this before in another message, but I just really like this saying, it tickles me. Time flies like the wind. Fruit flies like bananas. It twists the head a little, perhaps, but there's a point there, to be sure. Time goes by quickly. I think we all know that as we look at our lives and see how fast things come through and disappear. Time will pass us by if we let it. And one more, an Edism, perhaps. I think maybe I've mentioned this before, too. Time flies when you throw the alarm clock. And I consider that every day I have to go to work, but we won't talk about that. But anyway, to quote Mr. Franklin again, he also once said that lost time is never found again, and that's kind of what we've been getting at here. Time is an important resource, a precious commodity in our lives. I think we understand that. It is a non-renewable resource. Again, once it's spent, it's spent. It's gone. So why, again, do we need to be so concerned with how we use our time, particularly in a spiritual sense? Well, among other places, John chapter 15 and verse 16 tells us that we have a job to do while we're here. Let's go to that, John 15 and verse 16. Jesus Christ lays it out pretty succinctly here, talking to the disciples. He said in John 15 and verse 16, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give you." And again, he spoke this to those disciples who were with him at the time, and by extension, he speaks to us as his disciples. So we have that job to do as well. We are to be bearing fruit pleasing to God, a quality product with the time that God gives us. We're to be an example of what God and Jesus Christ are like. And we cannot do that without God. And for that, we must spend time with him to take some of the time that we have been given and make good use of it, redeeming the time. You know, Jesus Christ also spoke of his use of time during his tenure on earth in many places. But one thing he mentions in Luke chapter 2 and verse 49, Luke chapter 2 and verse 49, I'm going to break into the discourse here in verse 49. He said to them, "Why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business?" Using his time to be about his Father's business. And we need to do the same. We need to be about our Father's business as well. He also said in John 9 and verse 4, I'll just go ahead and refer to that here, but John chapter 9 and verse 4, "I must work the works of him who sent me," in doing his Father's business, "while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work." And this is an inference to time, to using the time he had in his ministry on earth to do the will of his Father. He knew his time as a man on earth was limited, and it was precious to him, and he made the best and most perfect use of it. So how does our Father's business apply to us? What might that look like, at least in part? Our work here, of course, is to become Christ-like, to overcome those things that would cause us to fall short of that. We need to be growing in grace and knowledge, using that time, putting on that mind and heart of Christ, truly being his disciples and emulating him, making sure that that godly light shines to the world around us, developing and putting on holy, righteous character. In this way, we can teach the way of God to those around us, even if they don't quite understand what they're seeing, being a reflection of Jesus Christ's character. And why do we need to be doing this? It's part and parcel of our preparation of becoming ready to meet Jesus Christ at his return and to be able to take our places as kings and priests. You know, we know these things, we understand them, but this is something I have to ask myself. You know, how can we do this if we're not taking the time to learn now and taking the time to practice that way? Make it part of our very core, our very essence. Because there is a night coming for the world. We know that. There's a night coming for us as well. So we too must be about our Father's business while we still have time. Now, for most of us, time management is kind of a four-letter word. It's a little bit on the tough side. Discipline, those various things. It's a wish list item, kind of, as in, I wish I could. But in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People from Stephen Covey, he notes something profound. Quote, "Time management is a misnomer. The challenge is not to manage time, but to manage ourselves. The key is not to prioritize what is on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities." End quote. Yeah. Managing ourselves, that's, for me at least, a pretty tall order. That's where the biggest battle is. So it boils down to, what are our priorities? What is most important to us each day? Is time with God, prayer, Bible reading, and or study among those priorities? So we schedule our priorities to put what matters most in front at the top. Be sure they are scheduled to happen each day. Put them in the order that they need to be. So again, what is our most important thing each day? Those things that enhance and build our relationship with God should be at the top of the list. You know, we can consider perhaps what is said in Luke chapter 12 and verses 16 through 21, and look at it in terms of how time is used. Now, this in this particular case, it's going to be an example of how not to properly use it. But Luke chapter 12, and verses 16 through 21, one of the parables of Jesus Christ. Luke 12, verses 16 through 21. And breaking in again, he says, "Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, well, what shall I do since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns, build greater, and there I will store all my crops and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be married. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up his treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. One of the many lessons in this parable, a very important lesson. Well, I want to look at this in terms of how he used his time. What did he spend his time on? Himself, providing for his ease and comfort and forgetting God and forgetting others in the process. This was what he thought. This was what he spent his time on, himself. So we must make a conscious effort to consider what we spend our time on. You know, are we watching too much TV? Are we spending too much time in leisure pursuits? Those little projects and hobbies we might have, if we're not careful, spend too much time on them and not pay attention to the more important matters. We have to be careful with social media as well. I've talked about this before. It's a wonderful tool for connecting, but do we live our lives by it? Is that where we are at most of the time? There's some other things. Are time-saving devices. Do they really save us time? This is something my wife and I talked about one time. You know, it seems like if you buy yourself something that's supposed to be a time-saving device or some kind of project or something like that, it seems like they take more time to use or to learn or to do than if you had just done the thing originally without the device or project or whatever it was. So we need to look at these things, you know, kind of analyze them, perhaps see if they contribute or if they take away from our time. You know, if they're getting away in the way, of the weightier matters of loving God and loving neighbor by the time we spend with them. While we must make sure the most important priorities are scheduled in our day, it is also important to remember to incorporate and make room for a little downtime once in a while. We must remember that good time management is a balance. Mr. Hooser said one time in a UCG article back in 2010, he said, quote, time flies and how to make the most of it, that's the title. God does not want us to be workaholics. He wants us to take time to enjoy the good things as well, to stop and smell the roses, as it were. Remember to take time to enjoy the good things he has brought into our lives, and those things can most certainly be both physical and spiritual. End quote. So what are we doing with our lives? You know, just consider, analyze. You know, especially when, if ever, there's idle time in your day, you know, consider wise use of it. You know, what can be done with a few minutes? Maybe an hour while you have to wait for something. You know, like when you're waiting in line at the store, for example. Instead of looking at magazines and candy and whatever's at the side of the counters, I'm hoping you'd buy it by looking at that. Maybe meditate for a moment on a favorite Bible passage or, you know, maybe one of the attributes that we're given in the Bible to meditate on. We can also spend time thinking about others. You know, it's a two-way street, both profit. When we think about someone who's in need of healing perhaps, or perhaps a shut-in, just say a little prayer for them while you're there in line waiting for the cashier. Intercessory prayer, which we know is praying for or on behalf of others, is a wonderful and productive use of time. It puts God and the one that you're praying for first in your thoughts. It's service and love to them. So we can think, meditate on God, his ways, while we wait, like, for the oil to be changed in our car. There's another good time to do it. David spent time thinking about God and others and meditating on him. I'm just going to grab a couple verses here in the book of Psalms. You know, we heard about Psalms earlier today. the book of Psalms, chapter 63 and verse 6, to start with. Psalm 63 and verse 6. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches. And a very similar passage in Psalm 119, verse 148. I'll just go ahead and read it to you here. My eyes are awake through the night watches that I may meditate on your word. Again, that was Psalm 119, verse 148. It's something that David did frequently in his downtime, perhaps when he had trouble going to sleep or something like that. Thinking about God, meditating on his way. Maybe this has happened to some of you, but I know that there are times when I will start talking to God, you know, after I've gone to bed, and partway through the prayer, I found out I've fallen asleep. You know, I think that's happened to many of us. But I think one of the best ways to focus our thoughts and to put them on God is to be in that very situation. We're thinking about God through the last of our day and putting him first. I want to look at another good example of wisely using time, and this time in the face of evil. How did Daniel redeem the time? You know, one example is in Daniel chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10. Daniel chapter 6. There are many wonderful ways that we can use our time to serve God and one another. I'm just throwing out examples here for our consideration. But we know the story here in Daniel chapter 6. It's a story of jealousy among the very men that Daniel worked with throughout the day. You know, the governors, the satraps of the kingdom of Darius. And Daniel was making them look bad, and they really didn't like it. They wanted to do him in. And they knew that he took time to worship his God and only his God. And so they, in their brotherly love for Daniel, of course, suckered King Darius, essentially, into signing a law that would basically do him in. So Daniel 6 and verse 10, we'll just read the verse here. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And the first thing he did in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. And notice this, as was his custom since early days. In part because of Daniel's dedication to God, when his faith was tested later in the cave with the lions, which was the summation of all of this with the governors and satraps seeing him praying. Oh, Darius, look what he's doing. He's not honoring you. He's honoring his God. But he was ready. Because of that time, he spent preparing, spending time with God in prayer, looking to him as the God above all. He was ready. He was saved out of it. God chose to save him out of it, but he confronted it. He had the strength to do it because he had taken the time to prepare. So what of us? What of us? When our faith is tested, and it will be, and it has been, we have all experienced that. When our faith is tested, will we be ready? Will we have taken the time to prepare, gain that spiritual strength as Daniel did? Because no matter what, Daniel always made time for God. He took opportunity every day, excuse me, to talk with his father. It was a priority for him. He scheduled this priority in his life every day, three times a day. You know, there's a saying, the bad news is time flies. The good news is that you're the pilot. There's a man named Michael Altschul that gave us that saying. And basically he's saying that we have the choice. We're in control of how we use the time we're given. And it's a big responsibility. Part of good time management is wisdom, practicing wisdom. Proverbs 4 and verse 7, I will just go ahead and give that to you here. Proverbs 4 and verse 7, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. In all you're getting, get understanding. part of wisdom and understanding is knowing the value of time and making the most of it. I want to note something else that's interesting, and we talked about this before too, but remember that God created time for us. He created it for us. God created time for us to move through and to give us reference points. Let's go ahead and review this. Let's go back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 1, beginning of the, you could say the recreation account. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 3. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 3, we'll read through verse 5. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. Verse 5, God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day, the first two reference points of time that God gives us. Now, if we skip down to verse 14 of Genesis 1, verse 14, then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and to let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years." Then God made two great lights, verse 16, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. By creating these things, God gave us time and a way to measure time. You know, we can consider this as well in Leviticus, where God's holy festivals are spelled out for us, and it's noted very specifically when they are to be kept. And we have been given a way to do that through the timepieces that God has given us in Genesis. So how does God tell time? Does God need time as we know it? I mean, does he need a Rolex, as it were? I'm kidding, of course. He could probably have the most beautiful one ever. He created himself if he wanted. But I want to thumb through a couple of three verses that tell us a little bit about this. You can just jot them down if you want, and some of them are going to be very familiar. But they refer to how God sees time. 2 Peter 3 and verse 8, which is probably familiar to many of us, 2 Peter 3 and verse 8. "But, beloved, do not forget this one thing, that with the Lord one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day." And Psalm 90 and verse 4, it says something very similar to this. Psalm 90 and verse 4. Psalm 90 and verse 4, "For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, and like a watch in the night." These verses and other places in the Bible reveal and remind us of the eternal, of the everlasting nature of God. And speaking of Jesus Christ, as it is written in Hebrews 7 and verse 3, I do want to turn to that one, Hebrews 7 and verse 3. Referring to Jesus Christ, we're going to break into this, talking about the King of Righteousness. Anyway, he is described without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like the Son of God, remains a priest continually. In John 1 and verse 1, we'll just tack this on there as well. We know this verse, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." So describing him as being eternal, having neither beginning of days nor end of life. It is clear that God and his Son Jesus Christ do not see time the way we do in our limited way. They are eternal, always and forever. We in this life are given a temporary existence, a finite amount of time. to live, to learn, and to be about our Father's business. Really, in comparison, we really not even have a very small speck of time to live our life on the grand scale of things to do what we need to do. David realized this. He understood this. Psalm 39 of verses 4 and 5. Yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of Bible flipping here. Psalm 39 and verses 4 and 5. David understood the limits of his physical existence. He said, "Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best state is but vapor." David knew that he had a physical, limited, finite existence, and that there was better to come. Solomon noted something very similar as well, that none of us really know just how much time we really have. It's not like anyone has come along and said, "You are going to pass on February 14th of 2029. We do not know how long our existence is, and so we need to make the most of it. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, since we're in the neighborhood here. Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verses 11 and 12. Solomon noted in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 11 here, "I returned and saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For man," verse 12, "also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon him." This isn't to make us afraid or anything. It's just to let us know and remind us that we have X amount of time to live our lives, to spend that time in pursuit of God. We are linear creatures. We need time to move through. We were created that way. Again, God gives us a finite amount of time to live in, to learn in, to use, and to redeem, as we've been talking about. Again, like I said before, we can't make up lost time. All we can do is use what remains in a useful manner. It's like trying to make up lost sleep. It really doesn't work when you stop and look at it. You just can't. You might be able to try and get some more sleep in the next night, but it doesn't really work out. Sorry. So how are we using our time again? Let us consider how we use our days. No discussion, at least to me, of how we use our time in this life would be complete without looking at the parable of the 10 virgins. Again, a familiar parable to us with many lessons. Let's go to Matthew chapter 25. And I just want to go ahead and look at the whole thing here. Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 1. Mark's not going to help. Matthew chapter 25, verse 1. "Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise, and 5 of them were foolish." Okay, why were 5 wise and why were 5 foolish? We come to that in the next verses. Verse 3, "Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. They were prepared. 5 had taken the time and effort to properly prepare to be ready for the occasion. They scheduled this priority, as it were, and made certain that this was part of their daily lives. And the other 5, of course, took their ease. They didn't worry about it. They may have built up for themselves, like in that other parable, or let their time be consumed with other concerns. So when verse 5 comes along, But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. They all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, in verse 6, a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him." So suddenly it happened. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." They suddenly realized that they weren't ready. Verse 9, "But the wise answered, saying, 'No, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves.' And while they went to buy," they had not taken the time, like I said, "the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut." Verse 11, "Afterward, the other virgins came along also, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he answered and said, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you.'" And verse 13, "Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming," like we discussed earlier. It takes time to be ready. Five of them knew this and applied it. They used the time they were given in a wise manner. Consider here the consequences of not being ready. We can. We can note what happened to those who were foolish, and we can consider the application to us. Again, will we be ready? Will we take the time to be ready? Will we be there when the call comes? Of all the doors that we will encounter in our existence, this is not the one we want shut in our faces. Mr. Light asked once in a message some time back, "How is our spiritual preparation going?" And consider this parable. Are we repenting? Are we changing each day? If we're not right with God, it's not going to matter in the end, as the five foolish virgins found out. Preparation, repentance, change. If we're not dedicating quality time to these, most likely, they're not going to happen. We need a good relationship with God. And a good relationship with God or anyone else takes sincere effort and time sincerely spent. We cannot squander the time by being bystanders or fence sitters, if you will. Paul admonishes us in the book of Romans, Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13 and verse 11. Romans chapter 13 and verse 11. Let's see, I may be in the wrong place here. Oh, I'm in Acts. No wonder that's not going to work. I was about to read about Paul and his party setting sail from Paphos. I'm glad they took time to do that, but Romans 13 and verse 11. Okay, I'm breaking into this. "And do this, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed." We have to do this, practice this, make it a part of our lives to get prepared and ready ourselves for the coming of Christ and all that follows. Verse 12, "The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light." It's time to take the time to put on and practice godliness. For time is short. We must do it while we still have time. Brethren, as we've seen, to redeem the time, we must use it wisely, with balance and with moderation. We must consider carefully what we do with it. It's a precious resource. And consider what is the most important thing we must be doing with the time we've been given. Again, spending time with our God. Taking time to do that which is pleasing to him. Learn those things and do them. taking time to pray, study, meditate, fast when we need to. All those tools to build our relationship with our Father in heaven. You know, Solomon spoke much of time in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And, let's go there. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, I think we're probably familiar with a lot of this. To everything there is a season. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak, a time to love, a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. You know, as the called out ones of God, this is our time. This is our season. This is our time to grow in grace and knowledge. We're in school. It is our time to seek out wisdom and discernment. It is our time to prepare for what is coming. We've had our eyes opened. We've been warned of things to come. Excuse me. We are the ones being judged now. Will we be ready? Will the way we spent our time bear good fruit? Time is precious. Every day, time is short. When the time comes, we'd probably like to hear from our Lord. You used the time I gave you well. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord. So we as God's called out ones have a responsibility to take the time, to redeem the time, to grow, change, overcome, and make ourselves ready. As we're told in Revelation 19 and verse 7, you can just jot that down for your notes. But we're told, let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. That's us, the body, the ecclesia, each one of us. This is where we want to be when that time comes. You know, we have a duty to God, and we will have a duty to our future husband, to take the time to prepare ourselves and to make ourselves ready, for the clock is running. While we still have time, let's make sure that we are indeed preparing ourselves and making ourselves ready for the role we will be given in the kingdom of God and beyond. Let's redeem the time we've been given, put our priorities where they truly need to be, and make the most of today. Every day, while we still have time.